This is CliffCentral.com. Fashion Lab on CliffCentral.com.
Salam, bonjour. Hello to all of you who are tuned in. This is Liz Ogumba-Regis for your host, and thank you for tuning in to the Fashion Lab once again. Now, you know that we've had a last very full month, August-filled, denim-filled month, but we are now moving on. We're back on our regular flow. For those who have been tuned in, I hope that you've been able to get a lot of tips and tricks around how to wash your denim, how to do everything and all that shebang. But anyway, it's been an amazing week, and obviously we are back to talk about the South African fashion industry, and we're going to be joined by a very special guest shortly. And before getting into deep, we are also joined by our contributor Edgy Benson, who runs NUE New York with his Echoes from New York. Edgy, welcome to the show and thank you for joining
us. Hi Liz.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, and you?
I am good, thank you. May I ask what you are wearing, maybe at the top? Or are you going to tell us which?
I was actually thinking we should switch the tables on you today and ask you what you're wearing.
Uh-huh. Okay, so well, you can do that. I'm very flexible, as you know. So I am wearing a black dress. Don't ask me how I'm feeling, but yeah. I'm wearing a black, simple dress, knee-length dress. I'm wearing beautiful, some beautiful DNG pointy boots, kind of half boots. Beautiful, beautiful boots. So I feel like the black dress has been completed by those little babies. Again, these are other devils. They're not red devils, but they are devils in their own way. They're gold devils. But I'm feeling very... I've got a pink leather jacket from my... I think this was like 4 years ago. This was one of my first leather jackets. It's very plush. For those who are tuned in, I'm just going to have to take a picture and share with you, because you don't even know what I'm saying. Don't make me get my glass of wine. But anyway, what are you wearing, Edgy, and who made your clothes?
Well, today I'm wearing a t-shirt from... Oh, see, everybody's laughing. I think I'm...
Should I just want to say, should I say what you're wearing below, and then you can finish with your t-shirt on the top?
Oh my God. I got you guys, man. I think you guys are right about my mother.
Okay, so everyone, the Edgy is wearing Diesel jeans. And is it blue or black?
This one is a faded blue.
Okay, well, so he is wearing Diesel. He's the Diesel ambassador. He's the Diesel ambassador that Diesel does not know about, but we will be sharing that. Okay, thank you, Edgy. And what are you wearing on the top?
On top, I'm wearing a very relaxed Uniqlo t-shirt. I'm very relaxed today.
Okay, well,
so many good things happened overnight. So
wow,
I'm
very
relaxed.
Happy. I mean, considering I spoke to you about 14 hours ago and it wasn't a very good 14 hours ago. So we are happy things have flipped. So welcome to the show and thank you for joining us.
Yeah,
it's always good to have you on the show. Now we are also joined by our contributor from Portugal, who comes with her Echoes from Europe, by the name of Francisca Marzilli, who we have not seen for a long time. I know our listeners were worried. Actually, I got a couple of tweets asking what happened to Francisca, and I was like, well, she's just on holiday. She's just on holiday. She'll be right back, and here you are. So welcome to the show after a whole month of missing you, and thank you for joining us, Fran. And
it's so nice to be with you again. And was missing you too.
Yes, we missed you.
We missed you.
We missed you too. Edgy missed you the most, and then me. Actually, maybe it was me and then Edgy. Oh. But either way, you got missed by a couple of people here. What are you wearing, and who made your clothes?
As I already tweeted, I am wearing a denim for the last day of August. My denim stretch dress. With the buttons in front, and then a red pair of shoes, high heels, of course.
Well, it's really nice to know that you're wearing denim, and it's good. You missed the denim series
the whole
4 weeks, bro. I was like, if I hear denim one more time, I will fall over. So I'm done. I do not want to hear denim or talk about denim.
Yeah. Actually,
until further notice.
A lot of favors.
I'm sorry?
I said we did denim a lot of favors. We wore it all August.
I'm telling you. And it became like, if I see one more denim, I don't want to see denim personally. But anyway, it's a good thing. We still love denim and we have that relationship. Not like Edgy, but we still do have a relationship somewhere there. Now, thank you for joining us, Francisca. It's really good to have you back. And just a quick reminder to those of you who are tuned in, my favorite segment at the end of the show is called Who Would You Want to Dress and Why? So feel free to share with us your who's and your why's, because that is our red glass of Cabernet Sauvignon. Maybe it's a 2010 or 2009, who knows. After our heavy conversations, we need that. Anyway, keep your tweets coming. We're at Fashion Lab AF on Instagram. We're at Fashion Lab Africa on Twitter and Facebook. And we really, honestly, would love to hear from you. For those of you who are tuned in who also have some sort of ideas or some subject matters that you think we should be dissecting at the lab, please reach out to us at info@fashionlabafrica.com. If you feel you have some people who you think would be able to contribute as guests and maybe share with us some of whatever it is that's going on in their space, some of their winning formulas, please feel free as well to connect with us. Now, on today's show, we are talking around the South African fashion market, and we're joined by a very special guest, like I said. She is the director at 8th Avenue Refract Marketing and Pairzoo Clothing. She is obviously in marketing design, does works on concept development, branding, PR. She's really like one of those kind of like me. Well, not quite, but maybe more than me. But she goes by the name of Jane McGuigan. Welcome to the show, Jane, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you know, you're not exempt from the question, who are you wearing and who made your clothes?
Actually, I'm wearing myself, and we made our own clothes. which is fantastic. Actually, fantastic. My lead samplist, his name is Dieudonne, and he is sensational, and he made our clothes.
That's beautiful.
So yes, him and Normson. I want to say a little shout out to them. I know they're not listening right now. I'm hoping they're sewing, but we'll podcast it for them later.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on all of your work that you're doing. And as we were speaking earlier, I said, you know, when we want to have this sort of conversations, especially to specifically focus on a specific market, it's good to bring in minds like yours. And I'm not saying you're the only mind, there's so many other minds, but your experience in this game, how much time you've spent in it, and you have so much value to offer from different angles of it, you know. So I thought that this would be really a great opportunity to sit here and talk about the current sort of temperature when it comes to fashion in this market today, and you know, just your journey through and what you're doing and where your mind is, where you think we should be. So welcome to the show. Anyway, we really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
And yes, so before we go further, Jane, I just think if you could just give us a quick background of just where you come in,
what I've been up to.
Yes.
Okay, so from our side, I've been sort of rolling around the fashion industry for since 1993 when we graduated. I graduated from Technikon-Natal down in Durban, and at that stage it was one of the only places that you could actually do fashion. I came out the fashion industry and I went to work in a factory, and I had an immense culture shock because, you know, when you're in fashion school, everything is about the vision. So you spend 4 weeks doing 10 stunning designs and your storyboard's amazing. And then you hit the industry and your boss sits you down and goes, I'll have 40 designs by the end of the day, please. And you just have an absolute heart attack. So from that space, I threw myself at the industry, basically. Fortunately, I was involved in children's wear, which is quite simple, because it revolves mostly around sort of prints and appliques and those type of things. And then, obviously, as we all know, the sort of fashion industry started to close down. There was a lot of rioting and things with the unions. And from that space, I then went into the retail sector. And I started working in a company that we all know called Miladies, and I was a fashion merchandiser there. And that kind of got me back into sort of more of a marketing role. And I was doing their in-house magazine. And in order to do their in-house magazine, they very, very kindly paid for an educational program, which was to learn how to do desktop publishing and video and all of that fun, exciting new media stuff that was just starting to come to the country. And then I ended up, through that, the Miladies is part of the specialty group back then, and they were starting the Mr. Price brand. And I ended up working on the team that was started sort of launching Mr. Price. And after that sort of whirlwind couple of years in the fashion industry, The new media bug had sort of bitten, and the internet was just starting. I really am giving away my age. And I moved back up to Johannesburg from Durban to move into new media and new technology and those type of things, and slowly but surely ended up in the marketing space. And then, 10 or so years ago, I decided to start my own business, and I started a business in outsourced marketing consultancy. And I've been in that, well, I still am in outsourced marketing. And then about 2 years ago, the fashion industry started knocking on our door again in a rather loud way. And I'm a firm believer that sometimes when the universe knocks, you've got to stand up and listen to it. One of my, well, my now business partner, a lady named Monet, who is currently standing manning a stall in Brooklyn Mall at SA Fashion Week.
And I will explain to Edgy and Francisca and all of you the rush this morning.
The crazy rush to get here. Monet moved back up to Johannesburg as well. And we had been longtime friends. We met at fashion school. And subsequently, with my business partner from the marketing agency, Pezu Clothing came about. And we started manufacturing clothing locally in South Africa again and trying to re-inspire the local manufacturing industry. And then we realized with working with a lot of young designers that they actually don't really have a retail platform. There's a lot of online platforms that are, you know, really good, but that you're competing with a lot of international brands, you're competing with a lot of other clothing stores, and there was nothing really for the South African designer. And fortunately, I have the marketing agency has a technology team, and so we built an online website and promptly launched 8th Avenue Online. And we've been running for a couple of months now and recruiting designers by the minute. So yes, that's kind of my story.
Wow, that is a lot. It is a lot. You know, I always say that, you know, like just looking at how you've got to manage like so many things. And I think that, you know, the idea is to be able to just make sure that you literally just like, if you have five of these things that you got to do, you got to find ways to do them. So like you.
Because we hustle, baby.
Yeah, so like you, who's left the mall? So this is the scenario here for those of you who are wondering. She left the Brooklyn Mall, which is a pop-up shop they're doing with SA Fashion Week, and came in for this interview. But that's like an hour drive. But she had just taken an hour drive there, and then like, you know, dealing with designers, anything, any other extra hiccups, who's late, who's not coming, what's happening, what. And then come back for this interview, and then rush back to another meeting, and then rush back to the pop-up shop. And the distance is not down the street, guys. So the logistics of this is definitely also something that I feel, unless you have passion to do what you're doing, I think you could probably end up breaking down. Or we might find you on the side of the street eating bread and drinking wine.
The wine, definitely. The wine, definitely. They will be the wine.
So I think it's really cool. But I think let's just go straight into just some of the conversation. So first of all, there is a pop-up shop. The SA Fashion Week pop-up shop is happening at the Brooklyn Mall in Pretoria. For those of you who also want to go and see what's happening, there's a lot of brands there. What made you feel, first of all, that this is important for 8th Avenue Online, which is one of your stores?
Yes. And I think the main thing from that is I think our ethos and the ethos of SA Fashion Week is quite aligned. They're in the industry, they are promoting young designers, they're trying to give young designers a platform and get...
I think all designers.
Yes. No, all designers, but also in some sense, particularly young designers. They're trying to get young designers into the industry as well. And they are trying to give all designers a platform. You know, it is one of those things where retail is expensive. We all know the cost of retail stores. I mean, it's not everybody can have one. So I think by really trying to get our country to stop looking at overseas fashion and really start looking at local fashion, we've got, in my opinion, some of the best designers in the world. And we really are innovative and really are creating. And from that aspect, I wish no disrespect to our fellow contributors, but I do think that South Africans need, and Africans in particular, need to start really looking and investing in their own fashion industry. I mean, it's an amazing industry, and you just have to, you know, walk through a taxi rank to have a look at the street fashion to see what's going on.
Do you know what I normally say about that? I actually normally say that it is, as a consumer, it is my choice to buy what I want to buy. Mm. So I feel like I would actually flip that back and say it is up to the brands to work as hard as they can, whether it's for visibility, whether it is for whatever it is, to make themselves so present that the local consumers will actually have no other choice but to go to them. Because my thing is, when people say, oh well, the design, the local people should buy, no they shouldn't, they should buy what they want to buy. Nobody, because really that is their freedom. They can do what they want to do. So I think for me, it is up to us to make it so compelling and so refreshing and so make it such a force that any consumer who walks into a mall is looking for X brand or Jane's brand or Edge's brand or whoever's brand.
And I mean, I think from the side of the aspect of where I think things like the pop-up stores and those type of things are very valuable is that it is giving people an opportunity to see those clothes, because they are quite a few barriers to entry, so to speak, and it's actually putting that clothing in front of those people, which I think is important. And I think online has changed everything. It's disrupting the retail sector. Yes, the shops are never going to go away, because we still like to feel things and try things on and that type of stuff, and they're going to be around for forever, even if it's just to go and collect the item that you've bought from online. But from the aspect of it, I think that the fashion industry is changing so much. In fact, every industry is changing so much, and you've just got to put yourself out there at every opportunity that you get to get your stuff seen in the public space. You know, we're filled with clutter all the time of people throwing brands at us.
You feel the pop-up shop way of pushing a brand, you think is very relevant right now for South Africa, and you think, would you encourage more brands to actually focus more on that sort of way, or do you, because the retail industry is very tricky right now, and when I say that, I say that from a brick and mortar perspective.
Yes, and I mean I'm very torn on that comment, weirdly. My main thing is that we've got as sort of brands and those type of things, we've got to start focusing firstly more on our consumer and giving them some sort of consumer experience. You know, it's the days of walking into a big retail store and flipping through. I mean, I can't stand going to shopping malls. You know, it is. It's one of those things where you walk in there and you've got a sales team who aren't necessarily invested in the brand that they're actually selling. You've got dreadful lighting and these little cubicles that squish me into places from a retail experience, I don't believe at the moment that malls are really delivering a custom experience, whether it's a brand thing or whether it's a mall thing. But I think in terms of the pop-up space, it's an if we can make it an activity, you know, where people can go and experience fashion and try on clothes and see them on models and engage with a brand, and yes, hopefully drink some wine.
You know, I think, yeah, but and you know what, I'd love to hear from Edgy and Francisca, especially for you guys operating on different markets, but even though we're talking about the South African market, specifically with Jane, I still think that it's interesting to see and say what's actually working. Are you guys, would you say, maybe we'll start with Edgy and then Francisca, would you say, like, Edgy, in the US space, would you say that it's is there a lot of brands focus on the pop-up element, or do you still find brands just kind of, that's my brick and mortar store and that's my shop and that's it and that's what we focus on? What's working right now?
No, I think fashion marketing is the same everywhere. The pop-up shop is huge everywhere. You know, when you think about it from a very technical perspective, even the fashion shows are in some sort of, fashion week is in some sort of a pop-up shop, you know? Here, pop-up shops are a big deal. I mean, they are considered to be quite hip, you know? And it's probably the only way you can successfully retail now in a way that's engaging for the consumer, at least has some kind of an experience thrown behind it, you know. It's very interactive, it's very focused on what the designer is trying to show, and it's short, you know. People come, it's just a couple of days, a few hours, and it's with a whole lot of publicity behind it. So it's a big deal. It's a big option for retailers, I mean, for retailing fashion, is a big way for new designers to get known, especially if it's tied up with older designers, more known designers, and they can have a pop-up shop or a trunk show, those kinds of things. But it's the same. It's approached the same way as Jane is approaching it there. It's the same thing with you.
Yeah. And Francisca...
It's a major thing.
Yeah, and Francisca, what's going... Would you also say it's a big thing? A lot of brands, small or big, really still focusing on, you know, just making sure that they... sell through pop-up as well, or trade through pop-up as much as possible.
Well, I cannot hear you constantly. I have a lot of interruptions, but what I can say is that I agree with the AG when he says that the approach with the product is the same everywhere. But I also think that the future is definitely a pop-up. Pop-up in local sense and in virtual sense. Also the fashion weeks are not around in the same place now. Are around in a different place and different events. And every happening is a word, it has a completely different mood from the rest of the other exposants. So I would say that pop-up is our future.
It's very good. We're going to take a quick break. For those who are tuned in, we are talking about the South Africa fashion market, joined by Jane, who is an expert in this fashion industry space, or who has been there to experience it and really see it evolve. And obviously also appreciating contribution as well from Edgy and Francisca. But we'll be right back after the break. We're back by public fashion demand, and this is just a great conversation to have and just kind of see where the markets are, specifically focusing on the South African market. We're joined by Jane McGuinn, and we are also talking obviously to Edgy and to Francisca, and we're just talking about generally what we are doing. Now, Jane, you obviously you've got Pearzoo, you've got 8th Avenue, and you've got Retract. Mm-hmm. Can we just talk about what you're doing for 8th Avenue? Why did you feel the need to set up 8th Avenue online?
Well,
which I'm a part of, by the way.
Yes. Liz's clothes are fabulously available. And I mean, one of the key things that we noticed when we were, because Pearzoo being a manufacturing CMT, and that weirdly is also evolving by the minute, we realized that a lot of our, particularly our young and new designers that we're working with, don't have a retail space. They are basically selling online, they're selling on Facebook, they're selling on Instagram, and they're doing a great job, but it's incredibly challenging to get noticed in the online space. And coming from a marketing background, who I have corporate brands who pay me an incredible amount of money to drive traffic and them through their websites, you know, and spending it on really driving and activating traffic on a regular basis. And even they are struggling from that space to get the feet through their door. And no matter how amazing your brand and your store is, if nobody knows where you are, they're not going to come flooding to buy it. And I think from that aspect, we noticed that a lot of them were struggling. And also by uniting the sort of the designer industry and giving a consumer what they're looking for is new and fresh, trendy clothing on a regular basis, that is locally made and locally manufactured, and that is designs that they don't necessarily find in Woolworths and Poetry and those type of wonderful brands. So from that space, it was just, and that's how 8th Avenue came about. And We're about 4 months old now, and the store's going great, which is amazing.
So what is it that you're doing differently, actually? Because obviously there's so many online platforms right now, and we've also seen a lot of them rise and fall.
Yes.
Which I don't know what's happening, but obviously it just kind of puts us on the edge a bit. But what are you offering that's different from all these other platforms?
And from our side, we really are, and I mean, I suppose it's the marketer in me that's trying to make it as much about the user experience and what as a personally as an online shopper, and secondly as you know, an understanding of what consumers are looking for, to try and evolve the technology to actually service that. So the first thing that we are looking at doing is making, basically, we make your clothing to order, which, yes, I know, goes against every traditional 5 to 7 day turnaround. But it is, from that aspect, because we are a CMT and because we are a manufacturer, we can actually make your clothing specifically to order, which means we get to customize a little bit. So if you are like you and stunningly 6 foot, I can make your pants in a leg that will fit a 6 foot person. You know, alternatively, if like me, you're a 5'6", which we look at as standard. You know, from that space, the pant length and things can be adjusted. So from that space, we can customize clothing to a certain extent and make sure that we get the fit right for you, which I've seen, you know, a lot of online brands are now starting to do with you know, brands like Zara and those type of things. Their online platforms are getting very slick in helping people get their sizing right. The other thing is from our side is, because it is a make-to-order system, it's giving young designers also an opportunity that they don't necessarily have to go and produce 20 to 30 garments of something at, you know, hundreds of thousands of rands to get their ranges together. It is an opportunity for a young designer to actually get into the industry and get onto an online platform, because you don't necessarily have to have hundreds of thousands of rands behind you and, you know, produce huge amounts of stock that you then sit with. So from that aspect, it is, and we've got a couple of other things that we are innovating along the way. I'm very interested in launching a clothing month club, which is almost, it was inspired by Wine of the Month Club, where, you know, from the aspect of, I send you a box of clothing every month and you can try it on at home and try it on in your own experience and send me back what you don't buy. And there's a lot of things that, and I think that the difference is that we're trying to, one, drive new design into the industry, and two, really listen to our consumers in terms of helping them get the shopping experience that they're looking for.
I was going to say, you know, the box thing, obviously we're in Africa, sometimes I feel like
it's going to be an interesting challenge.
Some of the boxes we have sent personally never came back. You know, let's just talk about that. That's a different story for a different day. But I think it's just also about just taking caution on that point, but also just the hunger to want to be able to offer the market fashion in such a more sort of diverse, fun, different way, but still giving them what they want. I think just being disruptive. I think disruptive is the way to go to be able to even really break in this market.
We're doing pop-ups in corporate head offices. We're doing pop-ups in exactly that, in restaurants, in tile showrooms. You know, so it really is about trying to get your brand out as much as humanly possible, standing together as a collective and getting your brand out, everybody, you know, sharing each other's stuff, developing a little bit of a community as well, and hopefully elevating the South African fashion industry at the same time.
So what I was going to say to you, don't you find it so much work that you guys have to deal with? So you're, for example, with 8th Online, the fact that you have brands that have actually said, okay, fine, you're going to stock them, but you're going to produce for them. Isn't that giving yourself too much admin? I mean, already this stuff is not easy. It's a lot of stuff. I mean, it's a lot of work from the back end. Yes. How do you make these commitments and actually follow them through it without losing your head?
We band together and drink wine. on a more serious note, look, it is a lot of work. I have incredible business partners who help me with it. I'm not necessarily doing it by myself. And it is. It's very challenging. Because it is what a lot of designers don't realize is this is getting a range and a collection together is a 3 to 6 month process. You know, the number of times we get phone called and emailed of like, it's already in the middle of winter and they want, they you know, they now they want to start making hoodies for next week. I think there is, in a lot of cases, a lack of understanding of how much time and preparation actually goes into these things. But I think it is also, I'm really, on a personal level, and I know as on a company ethos as well, I really am quite passionate about looking at giving young designers an opportunity. And I guess it's, I want to give our established designers like yourself an opportunity as well. But I'm, you know, when I came out the fashion industry, I ended up in a factory, and it was, and yes, it was a shocking experience, and so it should be. I've been mollycoddled for 3 years. But it is one of those things that, you know, there's so many creative, talented people that I think are coming out of design institutions and just not getting off the ground. You know, where are those 300 to 500 kids that are coming out of fashion school every year? You know, some of them are selling cars, and some of them are working in retail as store managers. And why aren't they getting into the industry? And I think that some of the barriers that are out there for them, particularly from a huge amount of financial outlay and, you know, getting it into retail and knocking on boutique stores and getting their clothing into stores. So from that space, if we can disrupt that industry as well as, you know, hopefully work with them a little bit, not to scare them too much.
No, there's no scare. You know, so from what, that space, I just think what works, works. And Francisca and Edgy, you're very quiet. I would love to hear from you, but I just think what works, works. And I think that at the end of the day, if, for example, one of the things I'm taking away from the show today is that, you know, as we continue to deal with the challenge of the retail industry, which is a real challenge. It's there's a lot of stores, and you know, Jane, you live here. You see how things run. A lot of stores are closing down.
Yeah.
A lot. And you get your stock sent back. Unfortunately, if you're working on a consignment deal, which is what majority, 99% of the stores are offering right now, it means that you're going home broke. And you're coming, getting your stock back, and then what? So I feel like the pop-up is one of the things that I think for me to, on today's show. And for those who are tuned in, I mean, you're listening as well. You can take it as well. Take it with you and maybe try to find ways to pop up more, because then you don't have the liability of also having to deal with your rental spaces and all of these things to a point where you break down and actually close store. But you're still present, you're still visible, and you're giving people a refreshing new experience every time you pop up. Edgy and Francisca. Francisca, let's start with you, madam. What are your echoes so far, or what would you like to what would you like to share with us on that note?
Well, the idea of a pop-up concept doesn't scare me at all, because if you think about the capsule concept started years ago, it's a kind of pop-up dimension of creating. Yes. If you think about this, pop-up is a concept already inside of every brand in the end. I don't think it's something we are identifying more now, but it's something we are dealing with since already at least 10 years, I think.
Now, I want to talk to Edgy. Do you have any 2 cents on that? I just want to move into something else, something else that I really want to talk about.
Well, I mean, I was just going to say, I think a lot of, I mean, you can call it a pop-up, but there's a lot of ways that retailers are getting young designers in now, because that's where the creativity is. That's where they have the verve to just make amazing things. They just don't have ways and access, you know, to be seen. So what Jane is doing is just amazing. For us in our store, we have what we call the Envy Collective. It's exactly what Jane is doing. We get in young designers, young students, and everybody who is who nobody knows about that would be interesting.
Sorry to interrupt you. I just want to ask, where are the old people? Who's taking care of the old ones? Because everyone wants to focus on the young designers. What about the older ones?
Not that though. I think sometimes the problem with every business is that for a lot of the older people, they've been doing it, and some of them have gotten frustrated and they've left, you know? And the ones who are sticking around are constantly looking for ways to get out. And they're the ones working on pop-up shops, working on all kinds of stuff. But you know, we take everybody,
young and old. Young and old, it has to be. And I feel like also for me, when people think about things, think about it. You can't say, oh my gosh, there's a hurricane in like wherever it is, in Timbuktu. And then it's like, oh, just let's protect the young ones. Everyone is hit by a hurricane. So again, whether it's a fashion retail hurricane or whether it is innovation and keeping up with technology and keeping up with everybody, no one is exempt to, like, you can't sit and say, well, the young ones have been around shorter and the older ones are older. Everybody needs to be able to step up in this game today. Otherwise, if you don't wake up and stay on your toes and keep watch and keep moving, you're going to fall, old or young. So I think it's also just about just adapting as we grow along into just whatever it is that makes whatever winning formulas.
And I mean, Liz, I agree with you on so many levels on that in a slightly different context. I think it is just as challenging for established designers in this country as it is for new designers. I mean, it is. It's the, even if you look, and I mean, I have the benefit of looking at it from both a manufacturing and understanding the costs of actually manufacturing and looking at it from a from a design and retail perspective. I mean, yes, Woolworths comes to me now and goes, Jane, we love your stuff. I'd like 400 units. No ways. It is one of those things where from the level of investment in, you know, and the fickleness of the industry of them being able to turn around and literally say, sorry, we're rejecting the entire order because there was something fell out in the size curve, or you didn't.
The ribbon was not red enough.
Exactly. And I mean, what people also forget a lot in the fashion industry is these things are made by human hands. It is one of the few industries in the world that is not automated, and probably never will be. It is human hands that, and yes, you can automate some things. You can automate cutting, and you can automate lays, and all sorts of things. But it is physically a human being who sits down and makes that. And I mean, I know that I've sat at my desk going, what have I been doing for the past hour? Because your mind's in another place. And yes, you've typed 5 emails, but you've sent 3 out with spelling mistakes. Or whatever it is, it's human people that make these things. So yes, it's an imperfect industry. And for a brand and a retailer, which I can understand from their perspectives as well, is they're buying a product from you and they expect it to be to a certain standard, certain perfection in order to service their clients. But the risk for me to take on as a designer to go and service, and I mean, there are huge brands that have come to us and said to them, please make our clothing, because they want to. There is a drive also from the retail side to try and bring manufacturing back to this country. And we've had requests for, I need 5,000 units. And you know, I mean, they're huge, big retail brands.
Please tell me you say yes.
I don't, actually. I say
no. But don't you think that is also a limitation that we put amongst ourselves, where also, if you don't take those risks, as much as there is the chance of, what if something goes wrong and then they reject the whole order? I mean, financially, that's an implication that would probably get you drowning. But don't you think that if we operate on that level where, oh, I can't do this because maybe, then we are also limiting our growth?
There's a couple of reasons why I do it. As from that aspect, I do believe that a lot of currently at the moment, particularly in this country, is a lot of clothing and fashion is driven by retail. It's a case of they come up with a design and the spec and they have costed it already and you need to be able to produce it in this price point, which is physically impossible, which is why I can understand that a lot of our manufacturing went offshore. You know, it went to China and it went to India, and I shudder to think what those poor people are being paid. But it is one of those things where now they are trying to get manufacturing back into this country, but now you've got set barriers on price points that are just impossible for us to achieve. And I don't ever want to achieve those price points, because then I'm paying my staff like 12 rand a day, which is just immoral. You know, it's just immoral. So from that aspect, there's a bunch of those things. Then yes, too, there is the risk of taking on projects of that size. And again, made by humans. You know, if we lose electricity for a week and we don't make a deadline, that order's rejected and I'm sitting with a financial burden. So there's a lot of understanding and conversation that still has to happen within the industry itself between the companies who are looking at driving production and also design and clothing industry back into this country and the people who are manufacturing it from that side. Because, you know, manufacturing has been offshore for over 20 years. To now try and just bring it back and, you know, in a snap and expect it to just...
and flowing.
You know, it's almost impossible. And
I want to pose a question to Edgy and to Francisca. Francisca, if you had that, or if you were in that position of, hi, we want 500,000 of this, we want 10,000 of that, what would you do? Would you do it or would you just say no? In your current position as Francisca Marzilli with
sorry,
what you do...
Sorry, I cannot hear you well.
I'm saying if you are in Jane's position, hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
If you are in Jane's position and you got deals, different deals, so you have someone saying, can you do 5,000 of this for us? Someone else is saying, can you do 7,000 of this? Someone else is saying, can you do 10,000? You as Francisca Marzilli and where you are, your current status, where you are, what you do, would you take the orders or would you reject them?
I should be very, very well planned because otherwise I could better reject than take them.
Okay, so for your current position, you would just say no. I'm sorry, I can't.
In this, as a creative, I would not accept.
Okay, and Edgy, what would you do in your case if you had this? I mean, I almost know what you would do, but.
Well, I am in a sense what Giant does. I mean, we have a capacity of like 100,000 units a month, so for us, it's not an issue at all. I mean, we're a manufacturing company, so it's what we do. Mm. Yeah. So,
You're a bigger manufacturing company than Jane's,
that's why completely different.
It's completely different quantities.
Yeah, but I mean, in her position, yes. I think what Jane needs to do, if she arrives at that kind of a juncture, is to create the right partnerships globally that she would need to kind of be able to achieve those productions, because whatever she can produce is what helps. I mean, that moves the industry forward. So whatever relationships that she needs to create to allow her to achieve that kind of capacity would be great. Yeah.
But don't you think also when it comes to her situation, she's probably dealing with a couple of local big retailers here who say we want 100% produced locally, meaning here in South Africa. So even finding strategic alliances outside of the country or continent could still maybe then affect the relationship, because then when people want their 100% made in South Africa, then...
Has a very unique position, though. She has a very unique... The thing is, they might come to her and say they want 100% and they want this and they want that. But at the end of the day, they came there because they need her, you know? So she is in a very unique position to also negotiate this deal in such a way that it works for her. Yes, they have to understand, yeah, they want this all done in Africa. They don't have that kind of capacity. So it's either they compromise and have some of it done outside, or they can reduce the quantities, or they can invest in her to create capacity. And that's what a lot of companies are doing, by investing in small manufacturers that, you know, to help them create the capacity to satisfy them. You
very
know?
Nice, very good.
And companies like Uniqlo do the same. They go and they support you, whatever you need, because at the end, they are the main gainers from giving you capacity.
And there are a lot of retailers who are doing that in this country quite significantly at the moment. And they are investing in building smaller CMTs to give them structures and give them processes and give them quality and those type of things. Because, you know, like I say, those skills got up and left 20 years ago.
now to
get them back and to So it is. We are getting there. We're going to get right. But that level of expectation is still, in my opinion, quite significant between what the drive is to get manufacturing back here, and what is actually capable and happening on the ground at the moment. There's still a little bit of a disconnect.
Mm. Well, and, you know, I think that drive also has to, it can only be achieved by a skill limit. I mean, how much is being invested in creating the skills to do that, though? In, you know, the vocational training or the academic training needed for, like, cutters, sewers, tailors, those kinds of things. All of those things have to come together to actually allow you to achieve capacity. Mm. Even if they throw in money, you know, they kind of just throw in money in setting you up. They have to throw in money in investing in schools, or at least having a say in what the school curriculums are, so that, you know, you can generate skills.
Yes, and I mean there are some great programs that are coming back from a technical manufacturing aspect, particularly in the fashion industry. You know, we used to have degrees in fashion production in this country when I was in Technicon. These days, you know, that degree disappeared. You know, they are now getting programs back in to start teaching people sewing and production and you know, all those manufacturing processes and legacies that kind of went out the window. We've got a long way to go, but we're getting there. But it is something where I'm pleased to see them coming back. I don't think they're coming back fast enough. But if we just keep all doing our little bit, we'll get there.
So where do you see the future of South African fashion, Jane?
I'm incredibly, incredibly positive about the future of South African fashion. And I think it's evolving at a speed that I haven't seen in, like I say, 20 years. And I'm excited about a lot of the new talent that's coming in. I'm excited about the talent that has managed to sustain themselves in an industry that really wasn't very compatible for a long time. And as I say, exactly the same, and it's one of the things that we as a company are passionate about not letting happen is what happened to us is that we graduated 60 designers out of our class. We started with 300, 60 graduated, and I think I can currently count 3 or 4 that are still in the fashion industry.
Ooh. Yeah, but
and
this
I'm
is
guys,
normal.
Eh? Yes, no, it is.
It's normal.
it's very hard industry.
Is it normal for you guys out there in Europe as well, and edgy in the US too?
You mean
out of 60, you get three a few years late. Well, some years later.
I was going to say a few. That's very kind.
Many years later.
I think industry participation is very difficult for people who actually come out of fashion school now, you know? Fashion is difficult to get in. It takes a lot of, I think Jan is actually attested. She's been doing it for so long. It takes a lot of commitment, a certain person to stick around with all the frustrations that come with it. Because at the end, it's an art. And with art, it's just going to be bedeviled by frustrations all the time.
Guys, I guess...
But it's got this amazing upside.
Yes, though. I guess we're going to have to continue and just keep building. Jane, it's been really great having you on the show. How can our listeners connect with you?
They can find us on www.8th-ave.com. So it's the URL for 8th Avenue. There are our email addresses and all of our social chiclets and everything all over there. We are on Instagram and Facebook. So from that space, if they search for 8th Avenue online, they can find us at 8th Avenue.
It's been really nice having you, and thank you for joining us. Francisca and Edgy, thank you for your echoes. We also always love your insights and just hear from you, because it makes the conversation much broader and much just makes more sense. Who would you want to dress and why for 10 seconds each? Ting, ling, ling, ling. We're going to start with Francisca.
I would like to dress all the first ladies.
In the world? In Europe?
This period. Okay. Yeah, to transmit a more inspiring identity and not only the right dress for the right event as happens.
It's very nice. Edgy, who would you want to...
Inspiring.
Edgy, who would you want to dress and why?
I just want to support Jane. I want to thank her for joining us, and I think we should all go shop at 8th Avenue online.
Oh, Edgy, you just made my whole year.
Thank you. Thank you.
In that case, I want to dress Edgy in something other than diesel jeans.
Oh, yay. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I'm going to send you a pair of our pants, our men's fabulous pants, and you're going to wear them.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
I will.
Excellent.
Today, I want to dress Melania Alice. Trump. And do not ask me why. Please.
I didn't want to make her name.
Listen, I want to address Melania. I think she's got, look, you guys can hate all you want, and I know that her husband is completely opposite because someone needs to help him. Edgy, please go help him while I focus on Melania. And Melania's she's got a good body. She looks good, and I really think she could really look good in some Lee's old pieces. So no hating, someone please go deal with it, Mr. Donald, please. Himself. Guys, it's been great show. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for those of you who are listening. We are on www.fashionlabafrica.com for more information or for more conversations. Otherwise, take it easy, keep it real, and keep moving. Don't stop, don't close the shops, please. We need you. It's peace and love until next week.
Bye.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Fashion Lab on CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.